And good afternoon, it's Rod McClure here with our Monday afternoon book reading, and we've been reading Ivanhoe. We'll be continuing on after a word from the people who help make our station exist.
Capital Chemist Braidwood is open Monday to Friday 8am till 5pm and Saturday 8am to 12:30pm at their new larger premises at the Village Terrace. The friendly professional staff can assist you with medication packing to assist with managing your medication, having your scripts kept on file with the pharmacy, acquiring MedAdvisor, an online app to help order and manage your scripts that are on file, COVID-19 vaccinations. Capital Chemist Braidwood, proudly sponsoring Braidwood FM 88.9.
Our sponsor, Hockey's Braidwood, can supply you with sand, gravel, soil, road-based supplies or drinking water. They now have their tilt tray in operation and it has the capability to carry 20-foot shipping containers and anything around 12.5 tonne. Hockey's Braidwood can be contacted on 4842 2286 or by phoning Stephen Hockey on 0429 422 286. Ever thought of becoming a Freemason? Freemasonry is made up of men from all walks of life, serving their community while engaged in self-improvement, building friendships and seeking excellence in all pursuits. Lodge of Truth Braidwood has been in our community for over 160 years and we invite you to become a member of Braidwood's longest serving fraternity. If this interests you, please call Phil Schumark on 0427 422 046 for more information about membership. Sponsoring Braidwood FM 88.9.
And as always, a big thank you to the sponsors in Braidwood and the surrounding area who make our station's existence possible. Well, we've been reading Ivanhoe, and we're at an interesting point where Isaac of York is begging, basically, that his daughter Rebecca, the beautiful Rebecca, be returned to him. And we have learned that the Grand Master, who is Lucas Beaumanoir, is there to really crack down on the licentious life, which is being led by the Templars in Britain, particularly at this particular place. We'll continue on. "Conrad," said the Grand Master, "dear companion of my battles and my toils, to thy faithful bosom alone can I confide my sorrows. To you alone can I tell how often, since I came to this kingdom, I have desired to be dissolved and to be with the just. No one object in England has met mine eyes which could rest upon with pleasure save the tombs of our brethren beneath the massive roof of our temple church in yonder proud capital. Oh, valiant Robert de Ros, did I exclaim internally as I gazed upon these good soldiers of the cross, where they lie sculptured in their sepulchres. Oh, worthy, worthy William de Maréchal, I open your marble cells and take your repose, a weary brother, who would rather strive with 100,000 pagans than witness the decay of our holy order." "It is but true," answered Conrad Montefichet. "It is but too true, and the irregularities of our brethren in England are even more gross than those in France." "Because they are more wealthy," answered the Grand Master. "Bear with me, brother, although I should something vaunt myself. You know the life I have led, keeping each point of my order, striving with devils embodied and disembodied, striking down the roaring lion who goes about seeking whom he may devour, like a good knight and a devout priest, wheresoever I met with him, even as Saint Blessed Bernard hath just prescribed us in the 45th capital of our rule, ut leo semper feriatur. But by the holy temple, the zeal which has devoured my substance and my life, yea, the very nerves and marrow of my bones, by that very holy temple, I swear to you that save yourself and some few that still retain the ancient severity of our order, I look upon no brethren whom I can bring my soul to embrace under that holy name. What say our statutes, and how do our brethren observe them? They should wear no vain or worldly ornament, no crest upon their helmet, no gold upon stirrup or bridle bit. Yet who now go pranked out so proudly and so gaily as the poor soldiers of the temple? They are forbidden by our statutes to take one bird by means of another. to shoot beasts with bow or arblast, to hallo to a hunting horn or to spur the horse after game. But now at hunting and hawking and each idle sport of wood and river, who so prompt as the Templars in all these fond vanities? They are forbidden to read save what their superior permitted, or to listen to what is read, save such holy things as may be recited aloud during the hours of reflection. But their ears are at the command of idle minstrels, their eyes study empty romances. They were commanded to extirpate magic and heresy. Look, they are charged with studying the accursed cabalistical secrets of the Jews, the magic of the Paynim Saracens. Simpleness of diet was prescribed to them. Roots, pottage, gruels, eating flesh but 3 times a week, because the accustomed feeding on flesh is a dishonourable corruption of the body, and behold their tables groan under delicate fare. Their drink was to be water. Now, to drink like a Templar is the boast of each jolly boon companion. This very garden, filled as it is with curious herbs and trees sent from the eastern climes, better becomes the harem of an unbelieving emir than the plot which Christian monks should devote to raise their homely pot herbs. And, oh, Conrade, well it were that the relaxation of discipline stopped even here. Well you know that we were forbidden to receive those devout women who at the beginning were associated as sisters of our order, because it says in the 46th chapter, the ancient enemy has by female society withdrawn many from the right path to paradise. No, in the last capital being, as it were, the copestone which our blessed founder placed on the pure and undefiled doctrine which he had enjoined, we are prohibited from offering even to our sisters, to our mothers, the kiss of affection. Ut omnium mulierum fugiantur oscula. I shame to speak, I shame to think of the corruptions which have rushed in upon us, even like a flood. The souls of our pure founders, the spirits of Hugh de Payen and of Godfrey de Saint-Omer, and of the blessed seven who first joined in dedicating their lives to the service of the temple, are disturbed even in the enjoyment of paradise itself. I have seen them, Conrade, in the visions of the night. Their sainted eyes shed tears for the sins and follies of their brethren, and for the foul and shameful luxury in which they wallow. Bon manoir, they say, you slumber, awake. There is a stain in the fabric of the temple, deep and foul, as left by the streaks of leprosy on the walls of the infected houses of old. The soldiers of the cross, who should shun the glance of a woman as the eye of a basilisk, live in open sin, not with the females of their own race only, but with the daughters of the accursed heathen and even more accursed Jew. Beaumanoir, you sleep, up and avenge our cause. Slay the sinners, male and female. Take to you the brand of Phineas. The vision fled, Conrade. But as I waked, I could still hear the clank of their mail and see the waving of their white mantles. And I will do according to their word. I will purify the fabric of the temple and the unclean stones in which the plague is. I will remove and cast out of the building. Yet think you, Reverend Father, said Montfichet, the stain has become ingrained by time and constancy. Let your reformation be cautious as it is just and wise. No, Montfichet, answered the stern old man. It must be sharp and sudden. The order is on the crisis of its fate. The sobriety, self-devotion, and piety of our predecessors made us powerful friends. Our presumption, our wealth, our luxury have raised up against us mighty enemies. We must cast away these riches, which are a temptation to princes. We must lay down that presumption, which is an offence to them. We must reform that license of manners, which is a scandal to the whole Christian world. or mark my words, the order of the temple will be utterly demolished, and the place thereof shall no more be known among the nations. Oh, now may God avert such a calamity, said the preceptor. Amen, said the Grand Master with solemnity, but we must deserve his aid. I tell you, Conrad, that neither the powers in heaven nor the powers on earth will longer endure the wickedness of this generation. My intelligence is sure. The ground on which our fabric is reared is already undermined, and each addition we make to the structure of our greatness will only sink it the sooner in the abyss. We must retrace our steps and show ourselves the faithful champions of the cross, sacrificing to our calling, not alone our blood and our lives, not alone our lusts and our vices, but our ease, our comforts, our natural affections, and act as men convinced that many a pleasure, which may be lawful to others, is forbidden to the vowed soldier of the temple. At this moment a squire, clothed in a threadbare vestment, for the aspirants after this holy order wore during their novitiate the cast-off garments of the knights, entered the garden and, bowing profoundly before the Grand Master, stood silent, awaiting his permission ere he presumed to tell his errand. "Is it not more seemly," said the Grand Master, "to see this Damian, clothed in the garments of Christian humility, thus appear with reverend silence before his superior, than but 2 days since, when the fond fool was decked in a painted coat, and jangling as pert and as proud as any popinjay? Speak, Damian, we permit you. What is your errand?"
A Jew stands without the gate, noble and reverend father," said the squire, "who prays to speak with brother Brian de Bois Guilbert."
"You were right. You were right to give me knowledge of it," said the Grand Master. "In our presence a preceptor is but as a common compeer of our order, who may not walk according to his own will, but to that of his master, even according to the text, quote, 'In the hearing of the ear he hath obeyed me,' unquote. It imports us especially to know of this Bois Guilbert's proceedings," said he, turning to his companions.
"Report speaks him brave and valiant," said Conrad.
"And truly is he so spoken of," said the Grand Master. "In our valour only we are not degenerated from our predecessors, the heroes of the cross. But Brother Brian came into our order a moody and disappointed man, stirred, I doubt me, to take our vows and to renounce the world, not in sincerity of soul, but as one whom some touch of light discontent had driven into penitence. Since then he has become an active and earnest agitator, a murmurer and a machinator, and a leader amongst those who impugn our authority, not considering that the rule is given to the master, even by the symbol of the staff and the rod, the staff to support the infirmities of the weak, the rod to correct the faults of delinquents. Damian," he continued, "lead the Jew to our presence." The squire departed with a profound reverence, and in a few minutes returned marshalling in Isaac of York. No naked slave ushered into the presence of some mighty prince could approach his judgment seat with more profound reverence and terror than that with which the Jew drew near to the presence of the Grand Master. When he had approached within a distance of 3 yards, Beaumanoir made a sign with his staff that he should come no further. The Jew kneeled down on the earth, which he kissed in token of reverence, then rising stood before the Templars, his hands folded on his bosom, his head bowed on his breast, in all the submission of Oriental slavery.
"Damian," said the Grand Master, "retire and have a guard made to await our sudden call, and suffer no one to enter the garden until we shall leave it."
The squire bowed and retreated. "Jew," continued the haughty old man, "mark me. It suits not our condition to hold with you long communication, nor do we waste words or time upon anyone. Whether you be brief in your answers to what questions I shall ask you, and let your words be truth, for if your tongue doubles with me, I will have it torn from your misbelieving jaws.
The Jew was about to reply, but the Grand Master went on.
Peace, unbeliever, not a word in our presence, save in answer to our questions. What is your business with our brother, Brian de Bois Guilbert?
Isaac gasped with terror and uncertainty. To tell his tale might be interpreted into scandalising the order, yet unless he told it, what hope could he have of achieving his daughter's deliverance? Beaumanoir saw his mortal apprehension and condescended to give him some assurance.
Fear nothing, he said, for thy wretched person, Jew. So you deal uprightly in this matter, I demand again to know from you your business with Brian de Bois Guilbert.
I am the bearer of a letter, stammered out the Jew. So please your reverend valour to that good knight from Prior Aymar of the Abbey of St. Joval.
Said I not these were evil times, Conrad, said the master. A Cistercian prior sends a letter to a soldier of the temple and can find no more fitting messenger than an unbelieving Jew. Give me the letter.
The Jew, with trembling hands, undid the folds of his Armenian cap, in which he had deposited the prior's tablets for the greater security, and was about to approach with hand extended and body crouched to place it within the reach of his grim interrogator.
Back, dog, said the Grand Master. I do not touch misbelievers, save with the sword.
Conrad, take you the letter from the Jew and give it to me. Beaumanoir, being thus possessed of the tablets, inspected the outside carefully, and then proceeded to undo the pack thread which secured its folds.
Reverend Father, said Conrad, interposing through with much deference, will you break the seal?
And will I not? Said Beaumanoir with a frown. Is it not written in the 42nd capital, Delectione Literarum, that a Templar shall not receive a letter? No, not from his father, without communicating the same to the Grand Master and reading it in his presence?
He then perused the letter in haste with an expression of surprise and horror, read it over again more slowly, then holding it out to Conrad with one hand and slightly striking it with the other, exclaimed,
Here is goodly stuff for one Christian man to write to another, and both members, and no inconsiderable members, of religious professions.
When, said he solemnly and looking upward, will you come with your fanners to purge the thrashing floor?
Montfichet took the letter from his superior and was about to peruse it.
Read it aloud, Conrad, said the Grand Master, and do you attend to the purport of it, for we will question you concerning it.
Conrad read the letter, which was in these words. Aymer, by divine grace, prior of the Cistercian house of St. Mary's of Jorval, to Sir Brian de Bois Guilbert, a knight of the Holy Order of the Temple, wishes health with the bounties of King Bacchus and of my Lady Venus. Touching our present condition, dear brother, we are a captive in the hands of certain lawless and godless men, who have not feared to detain our person and put us to ransom, whereby we have also learned of Front de Boeuf's misfortune, and that you have escaped with that fair Jewish sorceress, whose black eyes have bewitched you. We are heartily rejoiced of your safety. Nevertheless, we pray you to be on your guard in the matter of this second witch of Endor, for we are privately assured that your great master, who cares not a bean for cherry cheeks and black eyes, comes from Normandy to diminish your mirth and to amend your misdoings. Wherefore we pray you heartily to beware and to be found watching, even as the holy text hath it, inventientur vigilantis. And the wealthy Jew, her father, Isaac of York, having prayed of me letters in his behalf, I gave him these, earnestly advising, and in a sort entreating, that you do hold the damsel to ransom, seeing he will pay you from his bags as much as may find 50 damsels upon safer terms, whereof I trust to have my part when we make merry together as true brothers, not forgetting the wine cup. For what saith the text? Vinum loetifica cor hominus. And again, rex delectabitur pulchritudini tua. Tell with merry meeting we wish you farewell, given from this den of thieves, about the hour of matins, Aymer Prior S.M. Jovosiensis. Postscript. Truly your golden chain has not long abidden with me, and will now sustain around the neck of an outlaw deer-stealer the whistle wherewith he calleth on his hounds. What say you to this, Conrade? Said the Grand Master. Den of thieves? And a fit residence is a den of thieves for such a prior. No wonder that the hand of God is upon us, and that in the Holy Land we lose place by place, foot by foot, before the infidels, when we have such churchmen as this Aymer. And what means he, I want, by this second witch of Endor? Said he to his confidant something apart? Conrade was better acquainted, perhaps by practice, with the jargon of gallantry than was his superior, and he expounded the passage which embarrassed the Grand Master to be a sort of language used by worldly men towards those whom they loved as paramours. But the explanation did not satisfy the bigoted Beaumanoir. There is more in it than you do guess, Conrade. Your simplicity is no match for this deep abyss of wickedness. This Rebecca of York was a pupil of that Miriam of who you have heard. You shall hear the Jew own it even now. Then turning to Isaac, he said aloud, Your daughter, then, is prisoner with Brian de Bois-Guilbert? Yes, Reverend Valorous, sir, stammered poor Isaac, and whatever ransom a poor man may pay for her deliverance. Peace, said the Grand Master. This your daughter has practised the art of healing, has she not? Yes, gracious sir, answered the Jew. And knight and yeoman, squire and vassal, may bless the goodly gift which heaven hath assigned to her. Oh, many a one can testify that she has recovered them by her art, when every other human aid has proved in vain, but the blessing of the God of Jacob was upon her. Beaumanoir turned to Montfichet with a grim smile. See, brother, he said, the deceptions of the devouring enemy. Behold the baits with which he fishes for souls, giving a poor space of earthly life in exchange for eternal happiness thereafter. Well said our blessed rule, semper percutiator leo vorans, up on the lion, down with the destroyer, said he, shaking aloft his misty abacus, as if in defiance of the powers of darkness. Your daughter works the cures, I doubt not, thus he went on to address the Jew, by words and sigils and periapts and other cabalistical mysteries. No, reverend and brave knight, answered Isaac, but in chief measure by balsam of marvellous virtue. And where did she get that secret? Said Beaumanoir. It was delivered to her, answered Isaac reluctantly, by Miriam, a sage matron of our tribe. False Jew, said the Grand Master. Was it not from that same witch Miriam, the abomination of whose enchantments have been heard of throughout every Christian land? Exclaimed the Grand Master, crossing himself. Her body was burnt at a stake, and her ashes were scattered to the four winds. And so be it with me and mine order, if I do not as much to her pupil, and more also. I will teach her to throw a spell and incantation over the soldiers of the Blessed Temple. There, Damien, spurn this Jew from the gate. Shoot him dead if he oppose or turn again. With his daughter we will deal with as Christian law and our own high office warrants. Poor Isaac was hurried off accordingly and expelled from the preceptory, all his entreaties and even his offers unheard, disregarded. He could do no better than return to the house of the rabbi and endeavour through his means to learn how his daughter was to be disposed of. He had hitherto feared for her honour. He was now to tremble for her life. Meanwhile, the Grand Master ordered to his presence the preceptor of Templestowe. Chapter 36. Albert Malvoisin, president, or in the language of the order, preceptor of the establishment of Templestowe, was brother to that Philip Malvoisin, who has already been occasionally mentioned in this history, and was, like that baron, in close league with Brian de Bois Guilbert. Amongst the dissolute and unprincipled men, of whom the Temple Order included but too many, Albert of Templestowe might be distinguished, but with this difference from the audacious Bois Guilbert, that he knew how to throw over his vices and his ambition the veil of hypocrisy, and to assume in his exterior the fanaticism which he internally despised. Had not the arrival of the Grand Master been so unexpectedly sudden, he would have seen nothing at Templestowe which might have appeared to argue any relaxation of discipline, and even although surprised and to a certain extent detected, Albert Malvoisin listened with such respect and apparent contrition to the rebuke of his superior, and made such haste to reform the particulars he censured, succeeded, in fine, so well in giving an air of ascetic devotion to a family which had been lately devoted to license and pleasure, that Lucas Beaumanoir began to entertain a higher opinion of the preceptor's morals than the first appearance of the establishment had inclined him to accept. But these favourable sentiments on the part of the Grand Master were greatly shaken by the intelligence that Albert had received within a house of religion the Jewish captive, and, as was to be feared, the paramour of a brother of the order, and when Albert appeared before him he was regarded with unwonted sternness. "There is in this mansion, dedicated to the purposes of the Holy Order of the Temple," said the Grand Master in a severe tone, "a Jewish woman, brought here by a brother of religion, by your connivance, Sir Preceptor." Albert Malvoisin was overwhelmed with confusion, for the unfortunate Rebecca had been confined in a remote and secret part of the building, and every precaution used to prevent her residence there from being known. He read in the looks of Beaumanoir ruin to Bois Guilbert and to himself, unless he should be able to avert the impending storm. "Why are you mute?" continued the Grand Master. "Is it permitted to me to reply?" answered the preceptor, in a tone of deepest humility, although by the question he only meant to gain an instant's space for arranging his ideas. "Speak." "You are permitted," said the Grand Master. "Speak and say, know you the capital of our holy rule, De Camillita Nobis Templi in Sancta Civitate qui cum miserimnis mulieribus versantur proptor oblictationem canis?" The edict is against having any interaction with loose women. "Surely, most reverend father," answered the preceptor, "I have not risen to this office in the order, being ignorant of one of its most important prohibitions." "How comes it, then? I demand of you once more that you have suffered a brother to bring a paramour, and that paramour a Jewish sorceress, into this holy place, to the stain and pollution thereof." A Jewish sorceress?" echoed Albert Malvoisin. "Good angels guard us." "Aye, brother, a Jewish sorceress," said the Grand Master sternly. "I have said it. Dare you deny that this Rebecca, the daughter of that wretched usurer, Isaac of York, and the pupil of the foul witch Miriam, is now, shame to be thought on spoken, lodged within this your preceptory?" "Are ye your wisdom, reverend father," answered the preceptor, "has rolled away the darkness from my understanding. Oh, much did I wonder that so good a knight as Brian de Bois Guilbert seemed so fondly besotted on the charms of this female, whom I received into this house merely to place a bar between their growing intimacy, which else might have been cemented at the expense of the fall of our valiant and religious brother. Has nothing then yet passed between them in breach of his vow?" demanded the Grand Master. "What, under this roof?" said the preceptor, crossing himself. "Saint Magdalene and the 10,000 virgins forbid. No, no, if I have sinned in receiving her here, it was in the erring thought that I might there break off our brother's besotted devotion to this Jewess, which seemed to me so wild and unnatural that I could not but ascribe it to some
touch of insanity, more to be cured by pity than reproof. But since your reverend wisdom has discovered this Jewish queen to be a sorceress, perchance it may account fully for his enamoured folly?
It does. It does, said Beaumanoir. See, Brother Conrad, the peril of yielding to the first devices and blandishments of Satan. We look upon women only to gratify the lust of the eye, and to take pleasure in what men call her beauty. And the ancient enemy, the devouring lion, obtains power over us to complete, by talisman and spell, a work which was begun by idleness and folly. It may be that our brother Bois Guilbert does in this matter deserve rather pity than severe chastisement, rather the support of the staff than the strokes of the rod, and that our admonitions and prayers may turn him from his folly and restore him to his brethren.
It were deep pity, said Conrad Montfichet, to lose to the order one of its best lances, when the holy community most requires the aid of its sons. 300 Saracens has this Brian de Bois Guilbert slain, with his own hand.
The blood of these accursed dogs, said the Grand Master,
shall be a sweet and acceptable offering to the saints and angels whom they despise and blaspheme, and with their aid we will counteract the spells and charms with which our brother is entwined as a net. He shall burst the bands of this Delilah, as Samson burst the two new cords with which the Philistines had bound him, and shall slaughter the infidels, even heaps upon heaps. But concerning this foul witch, who has flung her enchantments over a brother of the holy temple, assuredly she shall die the death.
But the laws of England, said the preceptor, who, though delighted that the Grand Master's resentment thus fortunately averted from himself and Bois Guilbert had taken another direction, began now to fear he was carrying it too far.
The laws of England, interrupted Beaumont, permit and enjoin each judge to execute justice within his own jurisdiction. The most petty baron may arrest, try, and condemn a witch found within his own domain. And shall that power be denied to the Grand Master of the Temple within a preceptory of his order? No, we will judge and condemn. The witch shall be taken out of the land, and the wickedness thereof shall be forgiven. Prepare the castle hall for the trial of the sorceress.
Albert Malvoisin bowed and retired, not to give directions for preparing the hall, but to seek out Brian de Bois Guilbert and communicate to him how matters were likely to terminate. It was not long before he found him foaming with indignation at a repulse he had had anew sustained from the fair Jew.
"The unthinking," he said, "the ungrateful to scorn him who amidst blood and flames would have saved her life at the risk of his own. By heaven, Malvoisin, I abode until the roof and rafters cracked and crackled and crashed around me. I was the butt of 100 arrows. They rattled on my armour like hailstones against a lattice casement, and the only use I made of my shield was for her protection. This did I endure for her. Now the self-willed girl upbraids me that I did not leave her to perish. Refuses me not only the slightest proof of gratitude, but even the most distant hope that ever she will be brought to grant any. The devil that possessed her race with obstinacy has concentrated its full force in her single person."
"The devil," said the preceptor, "I think possessed you both. How oft have I preached to you caution, if not continence? Did I not tell you that there were enough willing Christian damsels to be met with who would think it sin to refuse so brave a knight, le don dom amoureux merci, and you must needs anchor affection on a wilful, obstinate Jewess? By the mass, I think old Lucas Beaumanoir guesses right when he maintains she has cast a spell over you."
"Lucas Beaumanoir?" said Bois Guilbert reproachfully. "Are these your precautions, Malvoisin? Have you suffered that dotard to learn that Rebecca is in the preceptory?"
"And how could I help it?" said the preceptor. "I neglected nothing that could be kept secret, your mystery, but it is betrayed, and whether by the devil or no, the devil only can tell, but I have turned the matter as I could. You are safe if you renounce Rebecca. You are pitied, the victim of magical delusion. She is a sorceress, and must suffer as such. "She shall not, by heaven," said Bois Guilbert. "By heaven, she must and will," said Malvoisin. "Neither you nor anyone else can save her. Lucas Beaumanoir has settled that the death of the Jewess will be a sin offering sufficient to atone for all the amorous indulgences of the Knights Templars, and you know he has both the power and the will to execute so reasonable and pious a purpose."
Will future ages believe that such stupid bigotry ever existed?" said Bois Guilbert, striding up and down the apartment.
"What they may believe, I know not," said Malvoisin calmly. "But I know well that in this our day, clergy and laymen, take 99 to the 100, will cry amen to the Grand Master's sentence."
"I have it," said Bois Guilbert. "Albert, you are my friend. You must connive at her escape. Malvoisin and I will transport her to some place of greater security and secrecy."
"I cannot if I would," replied the preceptor. "The mansion is filled with the attendants of the Grand Master and others who are devoted to him. And to be frank with you, brother, I would not embark with you in this matter, even if I could hope to bring my bark to haven. I have risked enough already for your sake. I have no mind to encounter a sentence of degradation, or even to lose my preceptory for the sake of a painted piece of Jewish flesh and blood. And you, if you will be guided by my counsel, will give up this wild goose chase and fly your hawk at some other game. Think, Bois Guilbert, your present rank, your future honours, all depend on your place in the order. Should you adhere perversely to your passion for this Rebecca, you will give Beaumanoir the power of expelling you, and he will not neglect it. He is jealous of the truncheon which he holds in his trembling grasp, and he knows you stretch your bold hand towards it. Doubt not, he will ruin you if you afford him a pretext so fair as your protection of a Jewish sorceress. Give him his scope in this matter, for you cannot control him. When the staff is in your own firm grasp, you may caress the daughters of Judah or burn them, as may best suit your own humour."
"Malvoisin, you are a cold-blooded friend," said the preceptor, hastening to fill up the blank in which Bois Guilbert would probably have placed a worse word.
"A cold-blooded friend I am, and therefore more fit to give you advice. I tell you once more, you cannot save Rebecca. I tell you once more, you can but perish with her. Go, get you to the Grand Master. Throw yourself at his feet and tell him, not at his feet, by heaven, but to the doted very beard will I say. Say to him then to his beard," continued Malvoisin coolly, "that you love this Jewish captive to distraction. And the more you do enlarge on your passion, the greater will be his haste to end it by the death of the fair enchantress, while you, taken in flagrant delict by the avowal of a crime contrary to your oath, can hope no aid of your brethren, and must exchange all your brilliant visions of ambition and power to lift perhaps a mercenary spear in some of the petty quarrels between Flanders and Burgundy."
"Oh, you speak the truth, Malvoisin," said Brian de Bois Guilbert, after a moment's reflection. "I will give the hoary bigot no advantage over me, and for Rebecca, she has not merited at my hand that I should expose rank and honour for her sake. I will cast her off, yes, I will leave her to her fate, unless—"
"Qualify not thy wise and necessary resolution," said Malvoisin. "Women are but the toys which amuse our lighter hours. Ambition is the serious business of life. Perish a thousand such frail baubles as this Jewess before your manly step paws in the brilliant career that lies stretched before you. For the present we must part, nor must we be seen to hold close conversation. I must order the hall for his judgment."
"What?" said Bois Guilbert. "So soon?"
"Aye," replied the preceptor. "Trial moves rapidly on when the judge has determined the sentence beforehand."
"Rebecca," said Bois Guilbert when he was left alone, "you are like to cost me dear. Why cannot I abandon you to your fate, as this calm hypocrite recommends? One effort will I make to save you, but beware of ingratitude, for if I am again repulsed, my vengeance shall equal my love. The life and honour of Bois Guilbert must not be hazarded where contempt and reproaches are his only reward."
My love.
Things are hotting up. Well, bad choice of words, I suppose, for Rebecca. The reality of it is that many, many innocent women, young and old, were persecuted during this period and burned at the stake. A horrible, horrible death. Perhaps the most famous is Joan of Arc. Oh, she committed terrible crimes like wearing men's trousers. The reality of it is that many of these trials were political in the Middle Ages, medieval period. Well, what will happen? Can Rebecca be rescued? And if so, by who and how? And Wagyl Bur, what does he mean, one more chance? And, of course, the Grand Master. Nothing like an absolute bigot. Well, until next week, we'll find out more. Stay well and keep safe, Braidwood.